First of all, I'm so, so happy you are all here. This is the 30th anniversary of the Cascadia Poetics Lab. And what a 30 years it's been. So you'll get a little celebratory taste of that tonight. But I'll just start by saying a couple of things in retrospect about the history of CPL. First, just to remind you of its mission. Empowering people to practice poetry and deepen connections to place, self, and the present moment. And we could add to that that we believe that poetry is the nexus at which self-knowledge, bioregionalism, and expansive creativity converge. Cascadia Poetics Lab is a vibrant community whose workshops, festivals, and opportunities for connection can open the door to transformative experiences. Much needed in our day, by the way. We seek to empower articulation of the heart, mind, world of place via a democratic approach to poetry, the arts, restorative justice, and other practices of intimate ecological awakening. And that's the latest version of something whose origins go way back to radio. Paul Nelson, the sine qua non of Cascadia Poetics Lab, began as an interviewer. I think talking to poets, he said, wow. He found it very seductive. But it was originally formed to produce and syndicate weekly public affairs radio programs. At its peak, the shows aired weekly on 18 stations, including King FM, The Mountain, KZOK FM, KGON in Portland, and Village 900 in Victoria, among other stations. The interviews have evolved into the podcast Cascadian Prophets, available on Spotify. In 2009, it moved from Auburn to Columbia City, and soon after opened our second SPLAB in the former Columbia School. That was the venue for our first Cascadia Poetry Festival. Staged 7 times, last at Spring Street Center in Seattle at Subud House in October of 2023. I know a lot of you were there. Wow, that's all I have to say. If you weren't there, I'm very sorry. And the Poetry Festival 8 is set for this November, 1-3. So mark your calendars. It's going to be the launch of Volume 2 of Cascadia, Cascadian Zen. So I think a lot of you had a taste of Volume 1. So yeah, we're chomping at the bit. It's also responsible for the Poetry Postcard Fest. In a few minutes, you'll hear more about that. But that was founded in 2007, and it's an annual 56-day experiment in spontaneity and community building where registered participants send postcard poems to other poets on their list. It's now in year 17, 2023, and had 518 poets in 8 countries sending original postcard poems to each other. So, a subtle yet eloquent act of resistance in these troubled times. It's also responsible for lots of books, lots of good books. So, this is the little show and tell part. Please bear with me. Our big publication has been the inaugural publication of the new Watershed Press. And last night, available for the first time, is our deluxe edition of Cascadian Zen. That's a fundraiser. Wow, I'm going to move this away for your mercy. Out of mercy. All profits from the deluxe edition go right back into operating costs for the next book. So it's just, we go broke, sell some things, get a little bit of money, go broke again, and that's how it's the classic poetic cycle. That's how all poetry presses work. Just go from heartache to heartache. But I'm going to show you a little bit about the deluxe edition. So each one is 26 copies only. Strict limitation, no more will be printed. So each comes with a print from Nathan Worth. It's really stunning. So these themselves retail for the cost of the entire edition, actually. So it's a bargain. I'm gonna leave this out for you all to see it later. It's really stunning. And then here's the book itself. So it's hand-bound, embossed cover, of course, with a map in the back. All this beautiful Smythe sewed binding. And you open it up, and just all these poets, their signatures, there's 19 of them. So a really beautiful.
Original signatures, not printed.
Yeah, no, not printed. These are all original. Trust me, it was a lot of work, even getting 19. That was good. So this is available for sale. It's not inexpensive, but it's a really help poetry continue its good work. And then this is available for the first time tonight. It's our second publication and the first publication in our chapbook series. Sharon Thiessen is responsible for this. Oh man. The first thing you need to know about this book is, wow, it's so good. And the second thing you know about it is, wow, it's so beautiful. So letterpress cover, beautiful art papers. So this is only $20. So really, practically free, given its quality and its beauty. Pardon?
What is it?
Oh, this is Olson and Love, the transformative correspondence of Charles Olson and Francis Bolderoff. So Sharon Thiessen put together. It's really, and Ursula is the editor. Yes, so this is 100 copies, strict limitation, each signed by our very esteemed Sharon Thiessen.
And also women's print.
Yes, so the print itself is strict limitation. So each one signed by the artist, numbered by the artist, and no other copies will be made. So it sounds like I'm a business person, but I'm a philosopher. I walk in the room and all the money disappears. And not into my pocket. So, okay. Yes. And Cascadian Zen, of course, was so beautiful about it. It's an attempt to think deeply the resonances of both those words, starting with Cascadia. A view of this place, not from above, not the eye of the Imperium, taking stock of inventory of empire, but the view from below. Messy, complicated, full of mountains and waters, contesting voices, but also voices that are all finding ways to give word and to articulate kind of the heart-mind of what it is to be here. So we're very proud of the text. We've heard about that text already, but then tonight, you're going to be hearing about this truly awesome book. So the Cascadia comes back, Cascadian Prophets. And, I love the word prophets because, we tend to think a prophet is just like some, person really good at predicting the future. That's not really what a prophet is. A prophet is a seer, a person who has clear vision of what we could be. And so, of course, it sounds like it's the future because we're so blind right now that you see one day in the future we see better. But the seer sees clearly right now and invites us to see like them. And so these interviews, and Paul's a master interviewer, and these interviews edited by Sharon Thiessen, again, she will sign your copy tonight, again, being sold for a pittance, this text. These are all seers, and it's a beautiful interview. And Paul the poet is also Paul the big ear. It always reminds me of the Buddha. The Buddha had really big ears. Selfless listening. That's part of what it is to be here. So you'll hear more about that tonight. And then the final thing in my little show and tell is our beloved Sandra Fleming, artist. There's two of her works right here. There's some paintings on the other side of the wall. She has some works for sale tonight. The proceeds of which 100% go into operating costs. And here's one right here. This is for the wordy people in here. And the if anybody else slips through that crack, less wordy, but still quite stunning. So this one is $5. The rest of them are $1 each. So for those who look at the Cascadian Zen and drool, please on yourself, not on the book. But realize it's not in your, here you go, $1. $1. So I think you all can help us out with that. We have four very special speakers tonight. I'll introduce the first one, and then he'll speak, and I'll come up and introduce the second one, and then third, and then fourth. Our first speaker tonight is Ricardo Ruiz. You may know the name very well. So his many virtues, in addition to being a really excellent person and beloved member of the board, just all around a person of wisdom. He's also a really, really fine poet, award-winning poet. You know his book, We Had Our Reasons. If you haven't read it yet, that's great, because you have something special in front of you. So that's a wonderful opportunity. Ricardo will now take the first part of the program, please.
It was about 2 years ago that I was looking for community here in Seattle, and a friend of my wife reaches out and is just like, "Do you know Paul Nelson?" I'm like, "Nah, never heard of him." I go, send an email, go out to coffee, and am completely blown away by the knowledge and vision of Paul. We create a friendship, and then I'm invited to go and take part in being a board member of Cascadia Poetics Lab. I wish I could say I was here for all 30 years, but that means I would have started when I was 8, and who's gonna put an 8-year-old on a board, right? Like, I don't think so. Really? We'll talk about that. But being a part of this organization has been so incredible. First and foremost, we just heard the mission to share poetry, to go and take poetry out. The poetry festival, which we all are going to hear about, is an incredible way to go and allow that idea of projective verse, of spontaneity, to come through in the size of a postcard. It removes all barriers of entry that we need to go and get it right every single time. And though that is something special, and we can see beautiful works of art right here to our right, there is something also special just being in conversation with another human being, of being able to share our thoughts, our feelings. This organization does that at such a beautiful, fundamental level. Next, what is poetry than where we are located, the place in which we stand? I'll be honest, I did not know about Cascadia before I met Paul. I've lived here my entire life. One of the things that Paul said to me the very first time I met him that I have never forgotten is, "Cascadia was here before any of us, and it'll be here after all of us." I was reading the Odyssey the other day. Don't ask me why. I asked myself that question and I still can't answer it. And I sat there thinking about Homer telling these stories, and though that time has passed, we still look at it. We are doing a work that is so special to go and to capture this place, our own Odyssey, our own land, to document what is below us and what will be here when we are gone, and to be able to share it. And then, it was my first festival this last year. I cannot begin to say how incredible and moved I was by all the work. Okay, can we just stop and be like, we have Brenda Hillman and Robert Brainer speaking? Like, wow. The workshops. And everything is done with the intention of just sharing. I'm biased. I'm a poet. Poetry is my muse. The greatest medium of art. Sorry to all our visual artists on the walls beside us. To just go and share to what is the most beautiful piece of art there is, which is poetry within the community. Thank you all for being here to celebrate 30 years. Can we take a minute to just stop and think about that? I was 8 years old when this started. Like, that is crazy. How many nonprofits have started and fallen in that time? We look around and it is hard to go and to be a member of an organization to make things work year after year, and the longevity and dedication of Paul and my board and the other board members. I wish I could take any credit, but I can't. I've just walked in the door, and the legacy and foundation that is there will be there for another 30 years. There's so much more to come, and I just want to go and share the beauty that is and that will be Cascadia Poetics Lab. And if you just go and take a second to read some of the beautiful work in Cascadian Zen, what Watershed Press is doing, the festival, it's an organization that lives its mission every day and does it so truthfully and with the heart that will really go and change lives. Yo, give a shout out to Cascadia Poetics Lab.
So next up are two people. The first, Sally Hedges Blanquez. When I think of Sally, I always think of, wow, she likes chocolate, she likes poems. Good taste in both, wonderful person. And then Zach Charles. When I think of Zach Charles, I think, wow, there's hope for the next generation. You know, it includes people like him. So a young prophet in the making, I think. And they're both gonna come up here and talk to you about the Poetry Postcard Fest.
Classroom, but you guys don't look like second graders. So anyway, just a brief shout out to Cascadia Poetics Lab. Incredible in many levels. I first found out about it randomly. Poets in the Park in Redmond. I think I can get there. Yeah, I live in Seattle. I think I can travel all the way to Redmond. And there were so many wonderful things happening there, and one of the little workshops was finding out about the 56 days of August and writing postcards, participating in the Poetry Postcard Fest. I think I had to listen for a while. I don't know that I started in 2018, may have been 2019 or so, but I could have made a public service announcement like you should do this because, but no, you don't want to buy stamps. You don't want to go to the post office and look at all of the beautiful new stamps out. You would never want to do that. You wouldn't want to drool over them or think, you know, this is the opportunity that I have, that I can use all of those 2-cent stamps that I got from like mom and grandma and all of those people that I can't part with. But I could slam them all on a postcard. I could. But you don't want to do that. And you don't even want to buy postcards, I know, because they are tons of art. And they are funny and witty, and they are just the most beautiful images ever. But then when you talk to your friends, well, you don't want to tell them about the postcard fest because they'll just start giving you postcards because you know that, you know, there's, it's hard to buy for you. So just, yeah, buy her a postcard or two or three, and they go on a trip and you don't get a t-shirt, you get postcards, right? So that works. And then there might be a time where you decide that you have to go to that store called Costco, and you get thrilled when that big piece of poster board between the paper towels, there's a lot of those available, and you yank those out and you put them in your cart and you take them home, and then you get that old school paper cutter that you got for like $3 at a yard sale. That's probably the most well-used thing in your office, and you use it. You make all these postcards. But no, I don't think you'll do that. You wouldn't want to do that. You wouldn't even want to go to your mailbox because you would get something other than things from the nonprofits, things from, did you know how much things have sold for in your neighborhood and you can sell out too? No, you wouldn't want that. I mean, you're just like happy with birthday cards maybe. But maybe you might give the fest a try. Okay, a couple of things. Just saying, you know, during the pandemic, you can make use of all sorts of things. Like, you can really upcycle envelopes and rip them apart, and you can collage with them. You can, like, get Mod Podge and do really fun stuff. Then again, there's thanks, Costco, you know, it's like, yeah. Or you start seeing things and going, you know what, this was my past, this was me. That was the color of the phone on the wall in my parents' kitchen. And yeah, I remember that yellow pencil. In fact, I have pencils from my parents from the Grand Coulee Dam when we went on a road trip once. Amazing the things we hold on to. But anyway, and then you like start getting these vintage things, or you start saying, you know, I might buy that, not because I want to eat those pretzels, but God, it would make a great postcard. That box. You start buying the item for the boxes, and then, you know, it's just another addiction. I have plants, I have postcards, and just saying that today I got a phone call from someone who has been, you know, one of those things where I'm sick, but I don't know what it is, and I really hope they figure out what it is. And I walked a card over to the post office yesterday and mailed it, and she called me today because she got it. And she was in tears because I had made an effort. And I would like to say, I think sending postcards is definitely a moving thing. Okay? Thank you. I do. Probably, I'm sorry about that, Zach. So it was supposed to all kind of tie together about randomness. So one thing that I do when I look at a postcard is I might like try to find out about the artist or the place or the something like that. And I had never heard of the artist before, Maurice Devlonnik. Probably really butchered the name, but a French artist. And I found out that he had this chance meeting with an artist on a train, and this artist told him that he should pursue what he most loved, which was art. And it did happen on a train to Paris. So anyway, postcard and poem. On the train to Paris, or how to get from A to B. Teach violin lessons during the day, play in bands at night, but paint. Paint to wildness, swashbuckling sky, unshackled, brittle grass beside rising road. Create because you must, but always reference that chance encounter on the train to Paris.
as Sally mentioned, we often don't make an effort because we make things harder for ourselves. And I'm here to say right now that the Poetry Postcard Fest is actually a very easy way to strengthen your community, to build community, to make somebody's day, to get the call the next day and have that make your day. It's a cyclical thing. We strengthen our community strengthens us. And it's so easy to get a pair of scissors and cut up a cereal box, you know, just so the cool, kind of funky side, you know, get a little composition going in there. Just half of Toucan Sam, you know, cut his head off, send the head one way, send the wings the other way, with poems on him about decapitated toucans. That's really all there is to it. And it's such a brilliant to take a page out of Jason's book here. The first thing you need to know about it is it's brilliant, and the second thing is that it's beautiful. And to create that community with a new group of poets every single year, sometimes two or three new groups, if you're that dedicated, it really is such a beautiful thing. It's an opportunity to connect to place, like Ricardo was talking about, and as Jason mentioned, is one of the missions of the Cascadia Poetics Lab. This past summer, I spent my postcard, my 56 days of August, my postcard month, that's a little bit longer than a month, going down to the Alki Beach. I live right by there. And every morning, I went and I sat by the tide, and I composed a poem, and I sent it out. And it was such a peaceful, easy way to connect with the land about me. And a great way to start my day for that month, month plus. I think we should probably say a little bit about exactly how it works. You sign up on the Cascadia Poetics Lab website. There's got to be QR codes for that somewhere, or it's cascadiapoeticslab.org, correct? And you sign up, and then you'll get an email when July closes in that has your name and your address on it, along with 31 other poets' names and addresses on it. You'll make sure that's correct. Just your name and address. You'll make sure that's correct. You'll let one of us, Poetry Postcard Fest Project Board members, know that it's good or that it needs a little tweak. And on July 4th, you'll start writing poems and sending them out to those 31 other people. One a day, if you like, but you have 56 days to send 31 poems and cut 31 cardboard squares out of your cereal boxes. And then you wait, and the cards start flooding in. And it's a beautiful thing because you don't only have bills, credit card deals, offers. Wells Fargo told me they'd give me $225 if I opened a new savings account after I put 10 grand in the account. Are you kidding me? Anyway, I digress. And the postcards flood in, and it's beautiful, and it's so lovely to hear from people all around the country, all around the world, 8 different countries. We hope to get 16 this year, maybe, we'll see, and 32 the next. And it's really, I can't say it enough, a beautiful thing.
So 3 things you have to know about our next speaker, Gabriela Guitares y Mus. First thing you need to know is she's my colleague at Seattle University, so that gives the school a huge upgrade in my book. Second thing you need to know is she is a force of nature. And the third thing you need to know is why she's a force of nature. Because she's awesome. It's just This is that simple. What do I mean by that? Just listen to Gabriella.
Thank you. You always make me happy. I have my little speech here. I'm ecstatic to be a part of this event, this book, this organization, Cascadia Poetics. Today we're celebrating the 30th anniversary of the existence of this organization, because the poets, prophets, philosophers, intellectuals, public intellectuals, writers, artists in it have been taking the temperature of our Northwest culture for a long time and have been influencing our evolving culture here through poetry. As Audre Lorde says, poetry is not a luxury. I really appreciated that as a way of introduction, Sharon Thiessen, and I'm talking about the book, of course, interviews the editor and interviewer of the other 14 authors, Paul Nelson. It is such an appropriate beginning of this book. I myself learned many things about Paul that I did not know before, about his adolescence and his public radio beginnings as a young man, and I will use them against him. I particularly enjoyed finding out that both of us share music, and in particular, jazz. As an influence to our creative endeavors. I was very much influenced by jazz when I was a teenager and ended up in France at 17 and found out that Julio Cortázar was also there and how important jazz was to him, because jazz and boxing, he said, were the only things that were improvised. Everything else is planned. Paul Nelson, the editor of the book we are launching today, brings voices he identifies as poetic from his long radio ear, his deep, loving voice he lends to all of us. I'm humbled to be included in a collection with Robert Bringhurst, Brenda Hillman, Diane DePrima, Sam Hamill, and of course, to all of us, to all of you who are included, and that we are interviewed by Paul Nelson. And I wanted to tell Ricardo that I had a similar experience to you. I went and had coffee. Be careful with having coffee with Paul.
Facts.
I
second that.
You have coffee with Paul and your life has changed, because you, yep, you walk out of there and you have another 100 things to do. But you are in love. You are in love with his spirit. You are in love with his love for others. You are in love with how feisty he is with defending poetry and defending and standing up for all of us, and which nobody really does up here. I was like, I'm gonna do this because of Paul, and I think it's important to say things instead of just pretending like that's not what happened. Of course, and there's Jason, right? Jason is not the cherry, but the cherries and the icing on that Cascadia cake. And what a pleasure to be amongst them and all of you. Just incredible. But I gotta finish my presentation. Now that I have a new status of prophet, right? Along with all the other interviewees, I have been reflecting on the meaning of prophet. I read on the internet that the characteristics of a prophet are quiet, which I am not, and then thoughtful men, dramatic enough, never overacting their part, and there is only one woman prophet named in the Bible, right? So Miriam, Diane, Daphne, Brenda, Colleen, Mary, and I are the other seven. And in the first volume, Joanne Kiger, Robin Blazer, and I might have some of these people wrong, right, in gender. I'm sorry if I do, because I don't know some of them. Jean Houston, Rian Blazer, the other four. 11 in total, and if we add Sharon Thiessen, you have 12. We all know that a prophet is a person regarded as a mentor, leader, teacher, and a person who predicts what will happen, a seer, as you said, Jason, soothsayer, forecaster, fortune teller, clairvoyant. But Paul Nelson expands the definition to gratitude and jazz, voice and music. He sees music as a healer, and all of us prophets as word healers. The Mexicas, that's pre-Columbian, the Aztecs, saw people who were artists, painters, drawers, poets, musicians, as los endiosadores, the god makers. I translate god makers, because they were able to dialogue with their hearts. And then I want to just read you, not the poems that are in the interview, but a couple of other poems, if that's okay, we have time. I wanted to read this poem that I wrote about what is a poet. Poet is not poeta. The poet wailed in English, sang in Spanish. The poem had been walking towards her for a lifetime. It was at the cusp of her life, at the tip of her tongues. It had stopped her from killing herself, the poem. The poem had been the hand that held her voice into regurgitation, let her know that antidepressants could be words on a paper, lined up like pills on a table. The poem could be songs and rhythms. It could be hands pulling out daggers. It could be smells soothing her childhood lullaby into loving herself. In the poem, homophobia was absent. Acceptance was present. The poem normalized her, multiplied her, added to her languages and pauses. The poem was her body, her voice, her triangulations and aspirations, her exclamations, the memorizations of who she aspired to be. Like she, the poem was free. The poem was out. The poem was the blank wall of her future, the pet under her feet, the love. She had never looked so beautiful, given herself permission to speak. The poem was a recitation of her to her. The poem was the shelf of words of her imagination. It was a utopia, a bell. This next one is really short, but I have used a quote from Sam Hamill when he presented, so I wanted to read it to you. I begin, it's called Conversations. And I wanted to leave you with beauty, so I have two short poems here that I hope are beautiful to you, and they are Cascadian enough. Quote from Sam Hamill. Translation is my addiction. It's like I keep falling in love. When flowers talk, they're polyglots. They sing like birds. They gloat Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. They lend themselves to lonely women. They knock on doors with incisive colors, provoking glory. Target the senses of probable neighbors' dogs, gloat by knowing they will always matter, always be missed, always adorn sounds, always be today and tomorrow. And this last little one is called Not Flammable. Neither wind nor paper flowers will burn me, not dirt nor fire will burn metal and water. Will never be deaf to injustice and blind to absurdity. Oh, to be a garden for you. Somewhere a rosemary bush, a yerbabuena tea, a strawberry pie for your eyes, a blueberry patch for the neighbors, an onion for a cold, a yam in milk, a thought for a butterfly, a tombstone for a moth, an apple or a fig tree, all in one. Oh, the magic of being your apricot tree, your peach cobbler, your mouth full of joy. Oh, to be a garden for you.
You know, most people don't reflect on the fact that the northernmost satellite of the Sonoran Desert is the Okanagan Valley in Canada. So it's the only true desert in Canada. So you can go to Canada and experience something that Canada is not well known for, which is being hot. One of the things that makes this area of the Sonoran Desert hot is also because that's where Sharon Thiessen is. She's emerita at the University of British Columbia, Okanagan, in Kelowna. And I remember Paul Nelson some years ago showed this book to me, The Good Bacteria, and said, you gotta read this, it's so hot. And I read it. And Paul's absolutely right, he often is about these things. It was a terrific book, that was my gateway drug into Sharon Thiessen. It's also one of the, of her many books, one of the three books that were finalists for the Governor General's Award for Literature in Canada. So there's other people who certainly agree with this. Sharon Thiessen also, the second publication of Watershed Press, Olson and Love, 100 copies each signed, totally beautiful. And with the book launch tonight, along with our celebration, she is the editor of Cascadian Prophets. She will sign your copy. So yeah, I think we have enough for everybody tonight, so make sure you get them signed. She's just amazing, and so she is now going to close us out with this part of the program.
You make it hard to follow such generous statements. Thank you. And thank you, Gabriella, for your beautiful gratitude expressed so beautifully toward Paul, and really to everyone here and to the Cascadia Poetics Lab. Marvelous organization, marvelous spirit. within this Seattle community that does extend, whether through the postcards, through the conferences, and just through the exchange of poetry, poetics, of care, of consideration for the land, for this place we call Cascadia, that I live in, that you live in, that is so alive. It's a place that's constantly moving or threatening to be moving. I've always had a really strong connection with the United States, and specifically with the West Coast as it continues down. And so I feel at home here, and I feel at home with the Cascadia Poetics Lab's work, and was very delighted and kind of intimidated when Paul asked me to edit the anthology of interviews, because he is such an amazing interviewer. He is so knowledgeable. He has such a depth that he brings to the interviews, but not just a depth, it's also a lightness. There's a humor, there's wit, there's laughter, and that really, really is an important spirit to bring to a book of interviews, because then it isn't just someone asking questions and someone answering them. And these interviews do have a shape. They're almost like kind of verbal poems in themselves. But first of all, I'd like to congratulate the Cascadia Poetics Lab for doing this work, as Paul likes to call it, for 30 years. And it's wonderful that so many of you have shown up for the launch of Cascadian Prophets. I feel so honored to be invited here and hosted here so generously to be with you on this occasion of the publication of the interviews. Art mind is prophetic mind, said someone. When Paul Nelson asked me to edit the interviews that would be included in this edition of Cascadian Prophets, I thought, oh boy, here comes the ums and the ahs, the interruptions, the trucks driving by, the phone ringing, the digressions, the evasions, the laughter, and the real sound, the true sound of the voices that inhabit the poems. The transcriptions for these interviews were really very good. So what I did was basically edit the transcriptions. And what I wanted to do was to bring alive the particular voices of each of the poets interviewed and to hear them speaking. And this is something that Paul really brings out in the interviews. It's clear there's these sort of awkward moments at the beginning, and then a sort of rhythm starts, and the conversation begins. And at times it's difficult to distinguish between interview and conversation. And somehow this book, these interviews, are combinations of both. There are questions that Paul wants to ask, things that he considers important about the poetics of individual poets, but also he allows for the digressions, for the phone ringing, for the truck going by, for, you know, the longer stories. But he brings it back so gently to the poetics questions, and people I find are really, as the interviews go along, relaxing and becoming more and more open. So I'm sure that those of you, and I'm sure all of you, each of you will be reading these interviews and be really inspired by not only Paul's knowledge and his spiritual insight as well, but by the life inside the voices of the poets. My aim as the editor was to really honor the sound of the voices, the rhythm of the voices, and not to edit it so much that it just sounded like information being told. To me, the essence of a poem is its voice, is its sound and its rhythm. And to be able to maintain that sense of that particular poet's voice within the interview was really kind of a challenge, but I think it worked out really well. The sound of a person speaking, whether on the page or in any circumstance, I think is exactly the spirit, is the breath, is the life of the person. And I think sound, more than anything else, pulls us toward and makes us recognize the actual person and remember them. I know that I've had people who passed away, and in the old days there used to be something called answering machines, and so, you know, the person would have been, well, we're not home right now, and whatever, and then the person dies, and you can't erase the voice. You can't, because that really is the end. That really is. It's the silence. And so for a voice to be maintained on the page in the context of an interview was really, I think, the great achievement of this book of interviews. Everyone is completely different, and you get so much information about them, about writing, about life. It's really a great encyclopedia of contemporary writing. Some of the interviews were done as radio broadcasts, and others were recorded in their homes, which seems to have taken extraordinary effort and care and expense on Paul's part to travel to interview these people in their own context, their own locations. I wanted to say that these interviews are very readable. They flow organically, but there's also a focus and a sense of a path forward. Paul's a very skilled interviewer that way, because people can get carried away with digressions, but he always found a way to pull it back into another question that was then kind of related to what had been kind of the theme of that particular interview. The range of what these poets talk about is phenomenal. You could get a whole new education just reading this book of interviews. You have Peter Cully talking about the riot in Nanaimo when Jaws first opened and there were so many people wanting to go to the movie but not enough tickets. There were Stephen Collis talking about all the animals wandering around Chernobyl having a ball because there were no humans around. You have Diane De Prima talking about how she knew at age 14 that she wanted to dedicate her life to poetry, and she did. We have Daphne Marlatt interrupted by a phone call and then the answering machine coming on in the interview from a friend who lived down the street, wondering if Daphne was okay because she hadn't looked that good that morning. And then it's like, well, just, you know, the machine is on and the interview is playing. And then the person who was on the answering machine clicked on and started adding her comments to the interview. That was a great voiced, double voiced moment. The interviews flow in and out of conversation and the readings of poems, and in them we hear the sound of their poetics, of their concern and bearing, their particularity. This embodiment, the breath, the spirit in the voice, is where the prophetic differs from the already spoken and the safe space of what Charles Olson referred to as the dodges of discourse, of the partitioning of reality. William Blake spent his life taking experience back from abstraction. America, a Prophecy, is not only a poem by Blake, but also the title of an anthology published in 1973. One of its editors is George Quasha, a Blake scholar we've quoted in the introduction to Cascadian Prophets. And of course, Paul edited the original American Prophets as well in that spirit. Thank you, Paul, and also to Watershed Press for your dedication to what you call this work. Art mind is prophetic mind. Thank you to Veronica Martinez for being such a great help and such a great and helpful assistant. Thanks to everyone, living and dead, who is in the anthology, and everyone who isn't yet. There will be future editions. Paul wanted to come up and talk about the process.
There'll be a couple concluding words by a man named Paul Nelson. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but you won't, probably won't forget him quickly.
Oh, thank you for the beautiful things you said. I'm very grateful for that. You know, this is really an homage to all the people who gave me their time. You know, when I didn't know shit about poetry, like Allen Ginsberg and people like Michael McClure, people who just gave you their time and told you how, what they really thought about it and changed your life. It's amazing how your life can be going a certain way and then something happens. And you know, you start here, and then 30 years later, you're way over there. You were 8 years old when we started this. That makes me feel old. So many beautiful poems in this book. I could read Sam, because Sam Hamill hangs over everything we do. When we have sake, we think of Sam. When we have unagi, we think of Sam. But I was thinking, just to read something sort of quick and dirty, and there's one other thing. This gallery is so amazing. We used to live right down the street. What a beautiful place this is. What a beautiful community this is.
And your silent auction is still open.
There you go. And I saw Colleen McElroy. She was the last poet of the seven who've passed away to pass away. She edited her own interview. And she was in this very room doing a reading. And I heard her and I said, I have to interview her. And thanks to Luoma Durand, that happened at Luoma's house, which is just two doors away from where Denise Leritov lived for the last 8 years of her life. And if you go by there, as I try to often, you can see the plaque that we put up. It still says SPLAB, the old name of the organization. I consider it like, you know, an homage, but also sort of a high-class tagging. So, Charlie Potts lives in Walla Walla, and what a tremendous wit. And you know, a lot of people think Cascadia stops at the Cascade Mountains, but it doesn't. It goes to the Continental Divide. There's a great post on the website right now talking about the walls of Cascadia, the Continental Divide and the Cascades, and how much this protects this region and creates these microclimates. And so, and Charles, went from being a poet to being a real estate magnate to raising Appaloosas And so this is related to that. I'll just read it. It'll be the last word. And then Sharon and I will sit and sign books. There's many books for sale. Sharon will hopefully talk about the beautiful chapbook. It's the text of a lecture that she gave at the Gloucester Writers' Center. And it really gets to the core of our poetics. You know, everybody talks about Charles Olson, projective verse, human universe, all the great essays. But there was a woman who he was dialoguing with who got zero of the credit. Some of that was her own insistence. No, you're Maximus, you go out there, but the name Francis Bolderev should be a lot more well known than it is. And we know what little we do of her in many ways because of Sharon Thiessen's work. But this is Charlie Potts. This is called The Hermiston Horse Sale. Standing in front of steel stud pens, a man and his son from Elkland, Missouri, inquire about the bloodlines of my horses. Preliminary to flashing me his holier-than-thou card, the father says, with gray beard earnestness, "May I ask where you worship?" Up to my knees in horse shit and Christians, I reply, "Right here where I'm standing." Thank you.
So thank you all for being here. Special thanks to all board members. Thank you so much for your service. Also special thanks to our key volunteers, our funders, our participants, Veronica Martinez, Sine Qua Non, thank you so much, we need you. Columbia City Gallery, beautiful, it speaks for itself, how lucky we are to be here. Please consider becoming a Founders Circle supporter of Cascadia Poetics Lab or supporting us in whatever way you can. And there are many books for sale, many of which can be signed. So thank you so much, and happy anniversary, Cascadia Poetics Lab. And there's free food.